Yep. I am, we'll just jump right in. You got any questions for me?
No, sir. Let's get it. I'm good at talking.
Yeah. I'm going to introduce you like you just scored. Wait a second. Caitlin, are we running? All right. My hip hop playlist is still going on in here. You mind turning that down?
Just because I don't believe or agree doesn't mean I can't learn from you.
Why did you have to bring that up?
Okay. That one I'm super embarrassed about.
Do you like me?
Do I like you?
Yeah.
As an individual or as a person?
No, I
like you.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cool.
And I don't have any interest in appearing to be stronger than I am.
I ain't bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. He gonna leave. You feel me?
How do we love people who see the world differently than we do?
What would it look like if we truly loved all of our neighbors? Could listening to their stories be the first step? This is Seacoast Church, and there's way more to talk about.
I'm going to introduce you like you just scored in an NBA game as Derek Myers.
I'm telling you right now, like, life may not ever change externally, but if you change internally, you get to get a lot more joy out of life. Like, I'm present with my kids. I'm present with my wife. I'm present in my career. Like, I have so much wonder and joy with things that felt so mundane.
I gave God all my pain, but forgot to give him praise. People thought that I was dead. They threw dirt up on my name. I've been deaf to every lane. I don't hear them anyway. Wrote my verses all in braille. They feel everything I say. Threw myself into the music, but you know that come with hurdles. All that green made me toxic. I might turn a ninja turtle. God put me through the fire like a backwood. The devil tried to smoke my family tree. You ain't getting high on me. When my dad OD swore it took a part of me, I found out about your past. You use drugs as therapy. I was raised by another. He was trying to find peace. Hated how he seen himself, so he took it out on me. Man, that father wound is deep. I'm still talking about this.
Well, man, I watched the video last night, bobbed my head the whole time. People listening, if you like this conversation, you will. You got to watch the accompanying video to not only Derek Myers' new album, but also it will be an extension of this conversation. You and I have a history, Derek, so you got limited time, so let's just jump right in. But let me take a stab at you. Tell me what I'm forgetting. You're a pops and a husband. You're a businessman. You're a hip hop artist and producer, and then you are a host of the Relevant Podcast. What am I missing?
Oh, and also I have a nonprofit called Ownership is the New Black, where we teach young African-American entrepreneurs and creatives on how to advocate for ownership.
Nice.
That was my response to figuring out how can I not just talk about symptoms of the problem, but to actually fix them, which is, I think, teaching Black people financial literacy and ownership and advocacy.
Dang, I'd love to dig into that just for a long time sometime. But I'm curious of how all that works. Who do you have involved? How do you teach them and all of that? But maybe another day.
Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. I think I told you this before, but I always like mentioning it because it's just so neat. I will be playing playlists around the house or in the car, and my kids, by far, I mean, there's like songs that they remember from their childhood, and they're like, gosh, that brings back things. But the Love Go High,
yeah,
7 years ago, I mean, that,
I love that song, man.
That's a childhood song for my kids, and I love it. It's just like, oh my gosh,
that's what's up. That's dope, man.
Oh, I love it. So here's what we're going to do. I think this would be fun. I'm going to tell you my four favorite songs on the on the new album and then ask you questions, and then we'll kind of call it a day. Before we dive in, I'm just curious, not only as your friend, but it's also just interesting. Like, do you divulge into why in the world your door was knocked down in 2020, or that's not something you really talk publicly about? That's just crazy.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. Yeah.
What in the world happened, man?
Long story short, and this is actually an open case right now, but my little brother, so for those of you that don't know, I found out I had a little brother in my 20s. Well, actually, I found out about it when I was a kid, but I found my little brother in my 20s. And when I found him, you know, I was blessed to have my mom, and she raised me really, really well. He didn't have a lot of the opportunities that I had. So right before the pandemic, he would come down for Christmas every year since we met in my 20s. You know, he came back and I was like, man, you need to come just live with me and let's get on your feet. Right. So he came with me and we went through a lot of stuff, man. We talked about like our dad, you know, the trauma that he had. He didn't have a relationship with our dad at all. My dad was kind of, he was very absentee in his family, in his life. And, you know, we got him on his feet, man. We got him driving trucks. He went and got his CDLs. He stopped doing a lot of the stuff he was doing in the hood, et cetera, et cetera. And he went back to the hood and he was hanging out with some people. And some people he was hanging out with made some terrible decisions. And he did what he knew best, which was, man, I got to go back home and talk to my brother, right? And he came back home and he was like, man, I just need a break from the hood, man. Like, this stuff is safe crazy. Place. Yeah, I need to go back home because my house was home, right?
Right.
Well, he didn't know he had a warrant out for his arrest because he didn't do anything, right? He didn't do literally nothing. As a matter of fact, the trial that he's in right now, the witness literally just got on the stand and was like, he was just there. He was as much of a victim as we were, right? And police didn't really care about that. They just were like, yo, this guy's on the list and he's not here and we think he's running. So I went to take my oldest son to get his hair retwisted and I get a phone call. And they're like, yo, is this Derek? They're calling from my brother's phone. I was like, yeah. They're like, well, you need to come pick up your youngest son. He was staying with my brother because your brother's going to jail. And I came home and my youngest son was sitting on his steps, barefooted in his pajamas. And you have four U.S. Marshals with AR-15s surrounding the front door of my house. And my brother was, I came back right in time as my brother was being, taken off in the back of a SUV. And that was probably one of the scariest moments of my life, you know, because this is like post George Floyd. The tensions are really, really high in the country. But, you know, no man wants to come home and you see your baby just, you know, man. I mean, it almost moves me to tears even just thinking of, yeah, man.
Scared like, to death, too.
He's scared to death.
Oh, my gosh. How did you, I'm curious, like, were you able to really keep your cool, like on the outside?
Yeah,
like, how'd you respond to that?
I had to, man. Like, you know, black people and the police were, we didn't have great relations. I don't think we've ever really had great relations, but this was, like I said, this is right after the pandemic. This is like 2021, right. I believe, right? 2021. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, for what it's worth, sorry you went through that. My gosh. Yeah, right. My gosh. Well, it sounds like a theme that ties Nobody's Perfect, which is the name of your album, that ties everything together, is you said that you wanted to stop pretending like you were happy and actually find out what it looks like to truly be happy. And I'm curious, that just popped in your head and you decided, okay, I'm going to go on a journey. And it's like, how did you enter that journey of, hey, I got to figure this out?
Yeah. So during that time around, really, I think 2018. 2018 was the year where, and I think some of you probably can relate to this. I'm a type of person that I like to take negative energy and use it positively, right? So I would take things that would happen in my life, make music out of it, or, you know, frustrations, and I'd work. But the problem is when you take negativity and just keep taking it and using it as positive energy, the thing is, if you don't deal with the emotions that come along with it, you can burn out. And that's what happened to me in 2018. I fell flat and I just lost the taste of joy as far as life is concerned. And
yeah,
I went through an immense depression up till 21, where when that happened, I was broke. Like it went from depression to like, okay, now this is deeper than depression. Like, this is something that's crazy.
So you were depressed for a 3-year span there?
Yeah, I think so.
Dang.
Yeah, I'd say.
And I told you, I mean, right around that time in 2019, I was full-fledged mental health crisis. I mean, I was in the hospital for a week.
Yeah.
And that's crazy how that overlapped.
Yeah, man.
So 2021, you said you were just broken.
Yeah, 21 was when the depression was overwhelming. I think... I was so sad. I needed to figure out, like, I read a book that said below depression is death, right? Because you begin to lose the will to live over time. And then the next step is we going home to see Jesus. So I was like, well, I don't want to go see Jesus. I actually want to see my kids grow up to be amazing men. I want to, like, that's always been my thing. Like, Lord, please allow me to stay around long enough to watch my kids grow up, to see the healing of our family come forth. And what I realized was, I think I tried to fix everything outside of me. And I thought if I fixed everything outside of me, internally, that would change as well, right? So if I get more money, right? If I have more routines, if I have more friends, if I have more success, externally, I'm looking good, smelling good, you know what I'm saying? Everything is going to be good. Internally is going to change. And that's not how this works, or at least for me, it wasn't. I had to change what's inside of me to be able to accept the reality that I see and to actually find the joy that's been here the whole time. So I was so busy trying to change everything outside of me that I neglected what's most important, which was myself. And people are going to say, oh, that's antithetical to Christianity. I don't think so. Because, like, think about it. When you look, even when you're on a plane, they tell you to put whose mask on first before you even help the kids. Put your mask on, right? Because the thing is, if I'm a father and I'm and my relationship with God and myself is all out of whack, then how in the world am I going to help anybody, right? Mm-hmm. This, my favorite scripture that came out of this was, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. With fear and trembling mean that knowing that it's going to be hard to do that. But we're taught, I think, as Christians, to think that taking care of yourself is a selfish thing, right? Like, it's not selfish to take care of your mental health, your physical health, your spiritual health, right? It's not selfish. It's actually a blessing, because when you have margin to be able to manage the things around you, then you could be much more of a contributor to society that is helpful instead of a person that's hurtful.
Yeah, and I've heard it said this way, that self-care is not selfish.
No.
And that's just so true. I mean, and you take it to the farthest degree. I mean, at my unhealthiest times, you know, during 2019, I almost lost.
Yeah.
Like, I almost lost my life to where then my kids don't even have a dad.
Absolutely.
So it was like I had to prioritize myself and getting back on my feet. And you know what's so crazy, Derek, is we overlook the, you know, we say, well, love God, love others. Well, the verse actually says, love others as you love yourself.
As yourself.
And we don't even talk about that.
Right.
We don't even say it.
and I think that's the problem with a lot of Christians. So I have a song on my album called The Love You Give. And it was based off of this concept that, you know, I went through some things and I got publicly chastised by my Christian brethren. And during this time, there was somebody I don't even believe was a Christian said, there's no hate like Christian love. And so a lot of people are like, well, will you unpack that? And it's the idea that a lot of times Christians, our idea of tough love, like, man, we're gonna pick it outside of this building and tell everybody they're going to hell. It's like, well, how loving is that, right? Like, how loving is that? Like, what is the end result? But when you think about it, if you're not loving people as you love yourself, you're not thinking, oh, well, how in the world would I feel if I was making a terrible decision and people were just, rather than trying to talk with me, love on me, take me to coffee, earn my trust, earn the right to be heard, they're just going to stand outside of where I live at and tell me I'm going to hell. Or they're going to, everybody's going to hop on my Twitter or hop on my X or hop on my Instagram or TikTok, and they're just going to send all these comments about how God hates me now because of my decisions. What's loving about that? Maybe even if you're right, that may even be true, but we know that it's not always about the message. It's often about how you deliver the message that determines the love of the person, right? It's how you deliver the message.
Yeah, it's like we're obsessed. We want to be a courtroom instead of a hospital.
Yeah.
And I saw Pete Enns put that out, so I don't want to pretend like that was for me, but he articulated it better. But I was like, man, that's so true. Like, Christians are obsessed with being a courtroom and throwing out what we think people should do, where God's called us, man, just to serve and be a hospital for people.
And that just brought up an amazing, not an amazing story, it's an awful story. It's burnt into my brain, what you just said. It's the equivalent of this. My wife got into a car accident. There was a person that was in front of her, and they didn't put their blinker on, and they were on a two-lane street, and she was about to pass this guy. He didn't put his blinker on, and he turned the direction of where she was passing and ran her off the road, right? She ran into the side of the, she didn't destroy anything but the car. She ran into the side of a dirt hill, like a mountain or whatever, a hill in Tennessee. She breaks her back, like literally is on a stretcher. She, like, thankful to God she has activity of all her limbs. Her back hurts every now and again, but whatever. She's on a stretcher. I get to the hospital. I get a call. You need to come. Your wife been in a car accident. We walk in. She's literally has a neck brace. She's hooked up in all these beepy things and all those different things. She's destroyed, distraught, right? And a police officer walks in and hands her a ticket while she's in with her neck or whatever, and tells her to sign the ticket and says that the reason she's getting a ticket is because she destroyed public property, which was just dirt. It was dirt on the side of the road. I forgot what they call it. But so here's the thing. Was the police officer technically wrong, right? No, he wasn't. Is that a law? Yes, that's a law, right? Did something happen and she broke the law? Technically, yes. But let's look at what is happening right now. This woman is... doesn't know if what's going on with her body, right? Yeah. He could care less about her as a person. All he cared about, as a matter of fact, I think he was operating with a little bit of power control, because like you could have waited to even deal with this. Even if you're like, she's getting a ticket one way or another, right? I'm not going to overlook it, right? You could have waited to a better time. So the thing is, like, how he delivered the ticket was the problem. And that's how I think a lot of Christians operate today, is we think more about what we're doing for ourselves rather than how will people even receive this.
All right. Well, my top four songs, the first one is the first track, Hallelujah. And is that how you say it? I know you got a little tricky spelling on it. You just say Hallelujah?
Well, yeah. So I spelled it with the Y instead of the J, because like in the language is bless God in a sense, Hallelujah. So Yahweh, instead of the J, we use the Y.
I have listened to that song so much, and musically, obviously, it is so, it's like ear candy, but it is so moving. And now hearing that it was the result of a depressive state, I mean, I knew it was the result of hard times and overcoming and everything, but it just gives it so much more meaning. I'll tell you something that struck me right away is how, and I'll read it. You were talking about your biological father and then the man that raised you. You said, I found out about your father, biological father. I found out about your past. You used drugs for therapy. And then I was raised by another. He was trying to find peace, hated how he seen himself. So he took it out on me. Your posture, it sounds like it's a posture of healing because you're basically saying, I understand. I don't approve of how these men treated me, but I understand. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand that people are doing the best that they can. And you're talking about this not in a, these guys screwed me and I'm mad, but I'm sure you lived a lot of years with that mentality, I would guess.
Yeah. So the biggest devil that I felt like I had to fight was my father wound. That was the biggest obstacle between me and happiness. Because as a kid, you know, when your dad's not there, he misses birthdays. And a lot of this was because of distance. And my dad's in the hood. He didn't have no money to fly down here. But, you know, he missed my wedding, missed my graduations. The only thing that he came to that was crazy was my first big tour, which was at the Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. He came to that, man. He was so happy. That, and there was another concert. He came to two of my concerts. He was a musician. So, but that was the first thing I had to do, was fight the father wound. My stepdad was a very religious person, but he also struggled with drug addiction. So I think the things that he was medicating, when he felt bad, I saw an uptick in how he treated me bad, right? So when he was embarrassed, it's like he had to find a way to put that. And a lot of times he would put it on me, projecting that stuff. And that was the first devil I needed to fight. I needed to find a way to forgive both of them.
And that fight started in this recent bout of depression. Is that where you feel you made the most headway and got on the other side of it through this tough season?
Yeah, it took me years, man. Sometimes I think depression is just mourning. You know, my dad died in 2016, 2017. My stepdad died before that. Both of them died tragically. And I think I never mourned their death. Like in the Bible, people would mourn for, I think it was a month when someone died. They had so much so that there was a group of ladies that we called they were wailing women, right? They would just cry. Right. But in America, we don't do that. It's, you know, you may get 2 days off of work if you have a family member now, and then it's back to work. And then, it's not back, it's back to work. It's back to family. Nothing pauses. We just move. And I think I needed to take that time to actually mourn my dad, to be able to, and then mourning him, I was able to humanize him and not just look at his mistakes, but I was able to see the bigger picture. And as I thought about more of his life, like, man, I had a great life compared to him. And I didn't realize that he, you know, wow, you were using drugs to numb the pain, as opposed to dealing with the emotions. How do I know that? Because I went through a season where, man, I drank alcohol every night to numb the pain, to numb the pain. Like, I'm like, now here's the thing. I still drink, but there's the idea of why do you drink, right? There's one thing to drink out of joy, and I'm having a glass of wine. We got a party. We're friends. I'm enjoying my life right now. There's another thing that says, I want to drink enough to where I feel happy. I want to drink enough to where I can forget about what has went on. And the thing about me is I'm not a fake person. During this season, I haven't put out a solo Derek Minor album since 2018 because I knew I wasn't in a place to be able to encourage anyone to do anything. Like, I didn't have anything but anger, rage, and sadness to talk about. So that's why even with some of the records that you heard, I either was just a producer on them because, you know, or I would, you know, the records were pretty, pretty sad. that's where I was at, man. That's where I was at.
In no particular order, I will say Hallelujah is my favorite song on the album, but top four, my next one would be track two, Pressure. Just tell us a snapshot of what inspired you to write Pressure. What's that about? I'll read a line. It says, they say pressure makes diamonds, but I feel a lot of pressure on my back lately. I want to give up, but I got to put the world on my back, baby.
From the jump, hit the squad and told them I'ma run it up, I'm cold with it. Standing next to me, you better bundle up and fro with it. Might put all my diamonds in the slushy cup, my floor is crack, his flow is mid. Tell him he ain't dope enough, your heart pump Kool-Aid and mind pump Duce. Please don't talk to me, cause I've been up 2 days. How you tap dance and run away, but still too lame. Gotta keep it on you, cause they shooting like it's 2K. Whoa, not at me, no, not at me.
Anybody, I think everyone can relate to the idea that you feel like you have the whole weight of the world on your shoulders. And so being where I come from, I'm probably one of the most successful people in my family, far as financially stable, married for 15 years, and doing really, really well. The problem with that often is now you go from being like everyone else to being like, all right, I'm the person that has to help. You know, so if somebody needs a bill paid and they come up a little short, well, I'd much rather you come to me than a check cash in place. Yeah, here, boom, I got you. You know, so it's just between managing that and then also trying to manage my own life, I felt like I had a lot of pressure on me. But what
and I, so you mean that literally, I got to put the world on my back, like in a, I love people.
Yeah, but I still got to apply pressure. It's a whole lot of pressure, but I'm still applying pressure. So it's like the work that I do inside of me, this is what I found during my journey, is the only time when we're not going to be under pressure is when Christ returns and there's a new heaven and a new earth. Up until then, what has to happen is you have to work on yourself enough to where you're durable to withstand what's happening on the outside. And when I say withstand, I'm not saying just to perform. I'm saying where you can mentally have what the Bible would say, peace that surpasses all understanding, right? It's by me tapping in closer with Christ and tapping in closer with God and taking care of myself mentally, physically, and spiritually, that is the thing that allows me to have the reps to deal with the craziness of the world. And that's what I hope people get from the song Pressure.
Yeah. All right. And I don't know why I kept saying four songs. I got my top five. So
let's get it.
more on the way. Track five. I'll tell you, when I listened to this casually, it sounded kind of like a 90s bling. What's up? Money coming? What's up? Yeah. And then, you know, listening to it deeper and then actually watching the video, It sounds like I'm trusting God when it's coming in, but then when in times where maybe it doesn't look as guaranteed, I'm trusting that there's more on the way.
Yeah, so
working nonstop, that's why I got a lot. Feel like they want to see me fall, so I'm about to drop. I leave a stand on everything, it can't take the spot. Now we up. Talked to God yesterday, said it's more on the way. I done made a lot of money and it's more on the way. I done got a couple plaques and it's more on the way. I put a lot of people on and it's more on the way. Let go, popping up. If life a marathon, I got no choice but run amok. I've been sliding on these tracks, my haters need a salt truck. And it still won't melt the ice and it's black. And I'm back, you talking down, what is that? Bro, you act like we ain't blessed or something. God ain't flexing something. If you want me on your set or something.
One of the things that I've had to look in the face as well is the trauma from being in poverty, being broke. When you're in poverty, people wonder why people that are in poverty often stay broke. You know, you see rich people that'll say, you need to just buckle up your bootstraps and tie them up and this and that, right? Oftentimes you hear that come from people that have never really experienced massive poverty. Not necessarily, when I say massive poverty is like, you don't know anyone that is paying their bills on time. Not where it's like, oh, I'm the run of the family. My whole family is pretty stable and doing well. No, I'm saying when you look around, everyone you look around with is struggling. Well, if you get to a place to where you make it out of that and you're no longer struggling, you still have to address the mindset that was a protection for you, right? So gotcha. When you're in an impoverished mindset, it protects you in the sense that I don't have enough to do A, B, C, or D. So I need to be careful. But then you get to a place of where I got to a place of abundance, but I still was acting like I was in a place of lack. So what did that do? That made me less generous. It made me more fearful of everything that happened financially, right? Money meant so much to me in a sense of protection. So when I wrote the song More on the Way, it was like, yo, let me write a song to encourage people that, yo, you don't have to worry about what's coming next. There's more on the way. You don't have to worry about what you have. There's more on the way. Now, am I telling you be stupid and irresponsible? No, I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that you don't have to fear, because God says, look at the lilies of the field. Are they not the most beautifully clothed things in the world? Yet and still, are you not more than a lily?
Yeah, I was just listening or reading something, and the guy, I think he was a therapist, and he said the cycle, and it kind of sounds similar to what you just said. It's like when we don't have what we feel we need and probably do, so we'll just say needs. When we don't have our needs, we're worried, like, where am I going to get the money? How am I going to pay for this? Then when we find our place in where our needs are met or in abundance, the worry turns from, man, where am I going to get it, to, oh no, I hope I don't lose it.
I hope I don't lose it all.
So worry is the problem. It's not the scenario. Mm-hmm. It's not where you're at financially. It's your attitude according to whatever life you're living. Real quick, taking a little theological turn, like, how do you frame financial blessings? Because I know that you are an extremely hard worker and you're also, a brother in Christ. And so you believe in God's provision. I mean, how do you, in your mind, how do those two things kind of intertwine?
In what way? Can you unpack that a little, the question a little bit more?
Yeah, one extreme would be, well, God's going to provide, so I don't really have to bust my butt and go after things. Whereas some people would say very little trust in God. So it's just like, man, I got to hustle. I got to be constantly trying this, trying that.
I think on both of those spectrums, they're both based in control, right? So the God is like, I have to work. And if I work hard enough and do all of this stuff, I can control the outcome of my life, right? Then there's the other person that says, man, if I just do all these spiritual things, they will move God to do physical things But in the end, I'm the one that's moving God to do this, the physical things, right?
That's so good.
It's two levels of control. I think the healthy place is that I'm going to work and do my best, and I'm going to fall in love with the process, and I'm going to leave the results to the results.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to work 40 hours, and I'm supposed to get this amount for those 40 hours, but I may not. And if I don't, that's fine, because I'm going to have what I need regardless. And I think that that is the healthy space, is knowing you can't control the outcome in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, so second to the last favorite is scars. It may or may not be one of my favorites, just being a hip-hop junkie, the De La Soul line. I was like,
my shoulder telling me to do wrong. I guess the stakes is high for my De La Soul. They'll try to hang me out to dry on the day I fold. But God can clean dirty laundry, that's one thing I know, yeah.
So I was lost and now I'm fine. Pray for me now, 'cause sometimes my pain feels like prison bars. Though covered in grace, I've got scars.
You know what kills me, Derek, is when I'm 46, so I'm not a young puppy anymore, but when I see people my parents' age where you can tell they have not recovered from whatever, they have not worked through whatever, mm-hmm. they're not freed from it. Mm-hmm. And it's like they're in their 70s, they're on the other side, they're not sure how long they're going to live, and they never got through, they never used their suffering. A passage of scripture that came to me, you know, listening to your story, and I just love the visual that you were in the fiery furnace, mm-hmm. and what evil meant to destroy you, mm-hmm. the fires actually burned off mm-hmm. your bondages, mm-hmm. just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, like the fire didn't touch them, mm-hmm. but the fire destroyed what was keeping them bound. I mm-hmm. mean, like you take someone who basically lives their whole life with bitterness or their whole life in fear. What do you think is the first step that those folks just weren't willing to take? Like maybe just honesty?
I don't know if it was a unwillingness to take the first step. I think for a lot of people, emotions, especially within a church, for a lot of people, we don't talk about how important emotions are. We almost act as if they're not there, right? And there's not many people that people would say, you start talking about emotions, now you're getting into new agey stuff, right? You're getting into that crazy stuff. But there's a truth in the sense that my issue wasn't just mental health, it was emotional health. No one that told me how to process trauma. No one that told me how to process pain. Nobody told me that if I get angry, it's okay for me to sit down and just admit that I'm angry. Most people would say, they'd be in denial. Oh, that didn't bother me. Oh, I'm straight. I'm cool. And I think that that's the first step. The first step is to first be in tune with your emotions. To actually admit that whatever happened 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it actually hurt me. It hurt me really, really bad.
And you may need someone to tell you that that's okay.
That's okay.
Like if nobody tells you, then you don't know.
You don't know. You think, oh man, I'm supposed to. What happens is you create a shame cycle in your life. You say, this hurt me. And then you feel shamed for being hurt about it. So then you try to deny the hurt even more. But the more that the hurt presents itself, you feel ashamed. So it's this cycle of deepening shame for things that weren't even in your control. I literally look at my emotions now. I try to look at them almost as a separate person. So when I get angry about something, I don't judge my anger. I literally say, dang, you really angry about that. I wonder why. That's how I begin the process of processing my anger or my sadness or my frustration. And it starts off really, really hard, but it's like a muscle. I found it easier and quicker the more that I've done that. So going back to the father wound, I had to actually admit that hurt me deeply and it affected almost every aspect of my life. So I have to look that in the mirror. My relationship with evangelical Christianity, that hurt me deeply. I had to look it in the mirror and admit that it wasn't just like, oh, whatever, I don't care. Who cares what they think about Mike Brown or George Floyd? Who cares, right? I had to actually process the pain so that I could actually see people for who they are, which is imperfect. That's like, if you don't process the pain, what happens is you create or project a character of them based through your pain, right? Usually that character doesn't have any nuance. You have no ability to build inroads with those people. And you could take it on and on. And I think for the people that are listening at home, the thing that is in the back of your head, the boogeyman, that's the demon you got to fight. It's not Harry Potter books. It's not, you know what I'm saying? Not to say that there's not any spiritual things. It's not Doja Cat dressing up like a devil or whatever. The world is going to be the world. Like, that's what it is. But the biggest demon that you need to fight is the monster that is holding you back from being happy. That's the first guy you got to fight. That's the first monster to fight. That's the biggest monster. Because the Bible says that we get joy from being followers of Christ, right? We shouldn't be angsty all the time. Like, there should be peace that surpasses all understanding, not us being manipulated by political structures and fighting one another over the smallest, dumbest things we could think to fight one another over. Most of those are projections, because you know what? It's really easy for me to try to control someone else. It's really hard for me to control myself. Some of us don't have any control of our emotions, won't have any controls of our urges and our desires. And that makes us, rather than deal with those, we'd rather project that on other people and try to control them. Like, no, look internally. That's where the joy comes from. Work out your own salvation.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I had patterns of thought before my mental health crisis, you know, and that the journey that led you to what we're talking about, this was my journey. I used to worry about, okay, if the economy fails, how does that affect me? What do I do? And the economy hasn't failed yet, and here I am worrying about it. Right. I mean, this is embarrassing. Yeah. I used to worry about, you know, here I live in Charleston, South Carolina. I was like, what would we do if a tsunami happened?
Right.
I mean, these are things that I used to seriously, like, think about and worry. And,
yeah, for sure.
I mean, just torturing myself. Absolutely. I mean, just, yeah. And I was going to ask you, when you talked about deepest wounds come from the church, that I would assume is you being open about your thoughts on what was going on in our country. And then, well, you're not one of us then, if that's how you see it. I mean, I know I'm simplifying it, but that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that that's a big part of it, but some of it is just little micro stuff with people that I really looked up to. Man, I remember, James White, the black James White, not the white guy, the black James White in North Carolina. I was talking to a man that I respect a lot, and I was talking about a mentor failing me, hurt me bad. And he said, man, I understand that pain. He said, process it, work through it. He says, but you want to know the deeper pain is going to be the one when you let down one of the people that you're mentoring.
Yeah.
It didn't sink in though until I finally was able to process actually what he was saying, which is, we're all human. We're all going to let people down. That's not an if I let someone down, it's a when. So the thing is, what do you do when you let someone down? It's that you go with a posture of forgiveness, or you go with a posture of humility and say, I'm sorry, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, I think that's been my biggest issue with a lot of people in the church in general. They're like, yo, I've been pastoring for 20 years. How are you going to tell me I'm wrong? Or, hey, you know, I have this position of power. What do you mean I'm not wrong? It's like, you can't be wrong ever. Just because
I like your pastor voice. I like your pastor voice.
Right. You can't ever be wrong, right? Also, just to kind of piggyback off of Scars, I want to encourage people out there too. There was a season when I went through where I thought that the things that I've been through were actually going to destroy me. I thought this was the end. I would literally tell myself, like, you're so broken. Like, you're broke. Like, you're unfixable.
Dang,
like,
man,
this thing has busted you up so bad. You're not going to recover from this. And I'm here to tell you that that's a lie. That's a lie from the pit of hell. Like, your scars are your superpower, because there's people that have been through similar things and they're looking for someone to say, keep fighting. They're looking for somebody to say, I need someone to help me keep fighting, because I don't think I'm going to make it through it. And the things that you've been through, that you've healed from, or that are in process of healing, the Bible says that we overcome by the power of our testimony. And your ability to testify of God's goodness and healing you from those scars is one of the most powerful things in the world. But they also allow you to even look back and say, man, look at all the things that God actually brought me from. See, you get to benefit from those things first. We don't build enough altars in 2023 American church, which you will see what happened when Jacob, something significant would happen in Jacob's life. What would they do in the Old Testament? They'd build an altar and they name the altar and they say, this happened here. So anytime they would travel through that direction, they would remember that God gave them the victory in whatever battle or whatever during that time. We don't do that. We don't take enough inventory. And I think that that's what our scars are. They're the ability for us to see that God's goodness. So.
Yeah, for sure. You know, when you talked about the fact that you will see yourself kind of on the outside and like, okay, well, why did I get angry? My therapist worded it this way. She's just like, why don't you just be curious? Be curious why you did such and such. Mm-hmm. You know what? That sounds so much like living in the spirit and not living in the law, because she even meant, you know, she wasn't saying it doesn't matter what you do, just be curious. But it's like, instead of beating yourself up when you mess up, ask yourself like, man, why did I do that? Which it sounds exactly what you're saying. It's just it's such a healthier way of going. All right. The last song is, The Love You Give. There's No Hate Like The Love You Give. I think it's the most unique track musically.
Yeah.
That's really fun. Neat, man. The man can sing. The man can sing.
Thank you.
You said that I let you down. Then you said you pray, but your God is hate. So please tell me why.
You've already explained it a little bit, but man, here's what keeps me up at night. Here's what keeps me going as far as the stuff that I do. And it's because there seems to be within Christianity, you've got a bunch of people that agree with the essentials, Jesus, God, resurrection. Right. But then you got people that see a lot of things one way. And, you know, we toss around these words. Sometimes they're helpful, but they, you know, more liberally minded with how they see stuff, more conservative minded. And that's an oversimplification. But what kills me is when I see people who say, I'm a Christian and there's no prioritizing love. Yeah. And they give themselves an out too. It's like, well, no, I have reason to be angry. Yes, that's true. Anger is not something that's wrong, but it kills me. It's like, no wonder the church is a mess when we're basically saying that the thing that's supposed to unite us, the thing that we follow Jesus with, love, doesn't really matter anymore. Mm. How the church treated you. I mean, it just seems like love is in the backseat, not the driver.
Yeah, and I think it's because of the metrics of success that we have for church and Christian people, which is often how many scriptures can you regurgitate? It's often how good is your quiet time? It's often external things, and it's often performance-based things, right? So how many members are going to that church? I think the better metric, man, how did you treat someone that you didn't like? how have you been working on yourself, right? Like what have you done to progress spiritually and mentally and emotionally to where you're not the angsty person, right? Those things are a lot harder to measure. That's why I don't think we spend a lot of time trying to measure that or trying to help people with those things. Because they're a lot harder to diagnose and to measure. They even take a lot of time. And you don't get a lot of wins off of that, right? We get wins for people showing up and saying we had this many people here. But saying like, you know what? This guy right here had a really bad anger issue 5 years ago. And now he doesn't get mad as much. And he's happy and he raises his family and that's great. We're not going to get many celebrations off of that. You're not going to get many people that want to fund your church off of that. But that's the things that matter the most.
Absolutely.
That's where we got to start, you know, planting our flag more into those things that are messy and nasty, but they yield the most fruit.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, hey, just wrapping this thing up, how does it feel to be on the other side of the record release? Because there's just so much work and anticipation and all of that. Like, does it feel good that now it's out there? Obviously, it's well-received because it's so good.
It feels great. It feels great being on the other side of release. It feels great being on the other side of the hell of depression. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not, and this is for people that are listening, like, that's who I'm called to, is the people that's been where I've been at. I'm telling you right now, like, life may not ever change externally, but if you change internally, you get to get a lot more joy out of life. I feel that. Like, I'm present with my kids. I'm present with my wife. I'm present in my career. Like, I have so much wonder and joy with things that felt so mundane, right? It's a journey to really humility, in a sense. The humility to think that, not necessarily that, man, I put this album out and all these people received it. Yeah, they should receive it. It's really more like a, dang, man, people cared that much about what I had to say to listen to this. And they actually responded well. Like, that means more to me than any stream or anything could mean. Obviously, I want to pay my bills. But when people ask me about the success of the album, it always goes back to, man, these stories of people saying, man, this album changed my life, or I was in tears when I heard the intro, or I felt seen when I heard Scars, or, man, you know what? I've been in a toxic relationship as far as with my church. I'm thinking about finding a place where I can get some actual healing, right? Like, those things make me alive. Like, that makes me want to make more music. That's what happens when you do the work on the inside. And I still have stuff that I have to deal with, but I'm progressing further. So I'm just saying that to encourage you. Like, it's worth it. If you listen to the album, I was trying to think of a last verse for the final song, but I just decided to just share my heart. And when you hear that last song, it says Shalom at the end, which means peace. And the first thing you hear at the beginning of the first song is All Praise to the Most High. And that's the link that links the album together, is the Shalom and All Praise to the Most High. Like, that's what links the album together. And that's what should link you, is peace and All Praise to the Most High.
Yeah. And you said something about, if you're struggling, just turn this album on. And what'd you say? Just,
yeah, turn this album on and listen to Big Bro, Big OG.
Listen to your
Let
Big
OG
G.
tell you that it's going to be all right. Like, I made this album for that. This is that album. When you like, man, I don't know if I can look in the mirror. I don't know. You know, I'm confused. I'm emotionally a wreck. Throw this album on, let it minister to you. Let me talk to you and help you walk through those things. Like, that's what this album's for.
You just can't give up. I don't care whatever happened, you can't give up, you feel me? And anytime you feel like giving up, I want you to put this album on and say, Big OG told me I can make it. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to everybody that was praying for me. Shout out to everybody that was hating on me. Y'all was motivation, you feel me? Most importantly, shout out to God. I wouldn't be here without you.
Thanks for listening. There's a link in the show notes to our podcast Facebook page where we talk about these episodes and share some behind-the-scenes information, including guests we're booking. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
Let's just cut that part out.
Yeah, we'll edit that. We'll edit that out. Well, I love the album. I love you, and I appreciate the time, man. It's been great. It's always good catching up, man.
Always, bro. I love you too, homie.